Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman is on assignment. Here's what we're looking at. City Council eyes a slew of issues, from police settlements to coach houses. We have a live report from City Hall.
I just want to say, I want to say it like it is. Don't take Tylenol.
Don't take Tylenol.
President Trump links Tylenol use during pregnancy to higher autism rates in children. We look at what the science shows.
When we talk about stigma, we often blame the community for not accessing services when it hasn't been available.
But that's changing for some neighbors in Gage Park, where there's a center offering bilingual mental health services for free. We take a look inside. First off tonight, advocates blast immigration officials for more major raids on the southwest side today. Local politicians and activists say ICE agents detained a street vendor, intimidated people outside of a Home Depot, and traveled in a caravan of vehicles down Western Avenue. They're among just the latest actions in the ongoing Operation Midway Blitz.
Every time we do a press conference, we talk about the escalation in tactics. And every time we have something new and egregious to report. ISIS cruelty has no bounds. Yesterday, we uplifted new and disturbing intimidation tactics at shelters, doing the critical work of serving our Hun House neighbors. And today, we are forced to highlight ICE agents brandishing military-grade assault rifles in a Dollar Tree parking lot.
Border Patrol agents have also reportedly deployed Marine units in a show of force on the Chicago River. Protesters have been gathering every day this week for morning and evening demonstrations outside an ICE facility in Broadview. Reproductive health providers in Illinois brace for an influx of patients after Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin says it's pausing abortion care beginning next week. The move is fallout from Medicaid cuts in the massive tax and spending bill backed by President Donald Trump that passed earlier this year. Advocates gathered downtown to discuss what they call a public health crisis when it comes to abortion access, a crisis they say is only getting worse.
This amounts to an abortion ban. But here is what I know and what I am looking forward to having members of the pro-abortion community in our state say loudly and clearly in front of you today. Illinois is ready. Our constellation of care, which includes providers, funds, advocates, and our incredible elected officials, will not leave people stranded.
Educators push back after the Trump administration pulls $8 million in funding for CPS. The canceled grant came after the school district refused to back off its Black Student Success Plan or to bar transgender students from playing in sports and using restrooms that correspond with their gender identity. Speaking before today's school board meeting, Chicago Teachers Union organizers said it's critical to address decades of disinvestment in schools serving Black and brown students.
We saw what happened with the greatest school closings in American history here in Chicago. It was devastating. It was almost exclusively focused on the Black community. It led to record displacement. It led to increased rates of violence. And we know that we're reversing that divestment and putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. And Trump is trying to instead promote billionaire investors who want to privatize the entire system.
CTU members also reiterated their calls for billions in additional CPS funding from the state. Tonight, Illinois is for the birds. Some half a billion birds are expected to be on the move across the country tonight as migration starts to hit its peak. About 25 million birds are expected to fly over Illinois tonight, with avian advocates calling for people to turn off non-essential outdoor lighting and close their shades between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. The aim is to reduce the risk of collisions that can seriously injure or kill birds passing over our state. More than 15 million birds are already estimated to have flown over Illinois on their way south. Chicago bird collision monitors say they tracked hundreds of hurt or dead birds on Monday alone. We've got much more about this on our website. Up next, Heather Sharon has the lowdown on a busy day at City Hall. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
As we just mentioned, immigration enforcement raids continued to sweep the Chicago area Thursday, shadowing the City Council's annual celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month. Alderperson Raymond Lopez used the celebration to tell his colleagues they should have listened to him and scaled back protections for undocumented immigrants. Here he is responding to comments from Alderperson Jesse Fuentes. Let's listen.
When you had the opportunity to grant in the law the transfer and custody of individuals from CPD to ICE when someone chooses to start shooting at people, sell drugs, human trafficking, or any of those other crimes, spare me the fake tears. Because you brought this on our communities yourself. And you're a hypocrite. And someone who's never had a deal with undocumented because you come from an island where you're guaranteed citizenship. So don't you dare talk to me about what my people have to go through.
Alderman, direct your comments to me, sir, please.
Fine. Then I want her censured for calling me a hypocrite in this room.
WTTW News reporter Heather Sharone joins us now with more. Heather, how did things get just so tense?
Well, we heard Alderperson Lopez essentially saying, I told you so. If we had made a deal with the Trump administration, he said on behalf of the city of Chicago, these militarized raids would not be taking place across the city. That prompted Alderperson Jesse Fuentes to call him a sellout, which prompted the angry reaction we heard from Alderman Lopez. Now, the city council declined to take up his move to censure her, but it was a tense celebration of Hispanic Heritage Month, which is typically a moment for school children and older people to celebrate Chicago's vast Hispanic community, with many people coming from Mexico and all over South and Central America. Instead, many older people used this celebration as another opportunity to express solidarity for those who fear that they're going to be deported and their family and friends who fear they might be caught up in these raids.
Well, despite that clash, the city council voted unanimously to welcome a new member. Tell us about the newest 27th Ward Alderperson.
Well, he is the youngest member of the city council, but he's got a familiar name. Walter Redmond Burnett is now the representative of the West Loop and parts of the West Side. He replaces his father, longtime alderman Walter Burnett, and he was only able to very briefly address the city council today after hours of delay as Mayor Johnson and his allies attempted to negotiate who would replace the former alderman Burnett as vice mayor and chair of the zoning committee. Those negotiations fell apart, leaving the council's leadership structure in limbo just as we head into a very difficult budget season.
Well, once the city council did get down to business, they voted to close the chapter on the alleged wrongdoing by former Chicago Police Sergeant Ronald Watts, settling 176 lawsuits. What's the cost to taxpayers going to be?
So it is going to end up costing taxpayers more than $126 million when it's all said and done. That includes fees for the city, the lawyers the city hired to defend disgraced former Sergeant Ronald Watts, who was federally convicted of engaging in bribery. But it nevertheless closes the chapter on a number of wrongful conviction lawsuits, and many aldermen were thrilled to spend $90 million to resolve these cases, saying it was the deal of the century because they thought it was going to cost the city a lot more and perhaps charts a new course for the city as they try to resolve police misconduct lawsuits, many of which date from alleged misconduct many, many years ago.
Yeah, certainly a long-running problem there. Well, City Council was also set to lift a ban on tiny homes. What would those new rules mean for property owners?
Well, it would still give each alderperson the final say over whether coach houses and granny flats and attic units could be built in residential areas of their wards, upholding the longstanding tradition of aldermanic prerogative, which has been really accused of fueling segregation in Chicago. However, the compromise that is still set to get a vote today at the City Council will uphold that while allowing some alder people to try this old but new form of affordable housing, it will nevertheless lift a 68-year-old ban on those tiny homes in at least some parts of the city.
Sounds like it's been quite the topsy-turvy day down there at City Hall. Heather Sharone, thanks so much. We appreciate it. And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Up next, what you need to know about Tylenol, autism, and new treatments. Stay with us. At a Monday news conference, President Trump, joined by RFK Jr. and federal health officials, linked Tylenol use during pregnancy to rising autism rates in children. Trump urged avoiding the longtime household staple during pregnancy and warned against giving it to infants. The announcements have drawn sharp pushback from many in the scientific and medical communities, which dispute the claims as unproven. Joining us to discuss more are Dr. Aisha Chima Hassan, founder and CEO of Corralis Health, a developmental pediatrics and behavioral health provider in Chicago. Dr. Kristen Rosso, assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral neuroscience at the University of Chicago. And joining us via Zoom, Dr. Melissa Simon, vice chair for research in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Northwestern University. Thank you all for joining us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Dr. Simon, I'd like to start with you, please. What does the research say about taking acetaminophen during pregnancy?
Current research actually shows that acetaminophen, or the active ingredient Tylenol, remains widely considered the safest over-the-counter choice for treating fever and pain in pregnancy. There's been decades of clinical research, all kinds of different types of studies, and that research supports that acetaminophen is the primary option for pain and fever relief right now.
Are there reasons to limit acetaminophen consumption during pregnancy?
Well, you shouldn't take any medication in pregnancy over more than what you really need. And so that's what we give advice. I'm an obstetrician. We give advice all the time. You know, you take the dose that you need for the time that you need it and then be done.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Rosso, what's your reaction to Trump and other federal health officials explicitly linking Tylenol with autism in children?
Well, what we do in medicine is we turn to the evidence, we turn to the research, and at this point, to date, there have been no studies that have definitively linked acetaminophen to autism. There have been both positive and negative studies. The problem is the methodologic approaches to those studies. So when you look at the power, it's a very low number of individuals in the studies, and they're also retrospective in nature, which means we have a diagnosis of a child with autism, and then we ask the parents to look backwards, and we find out some of the things that they've been exposed to, and from there we make links. But to date, there is nothing that says definitively, and we need to remember not to confuse correlation with causation.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, that even if there is, you know, studies that indicate some sort of an association, it's by no means definitive and shouldn't be guiding clinical choices.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Chima Hassan, you know, you see as many as 20 or 30 young people a month in your practice. What have you seen, and more importantly, you know, what does the research say about just the wide variety of factors that lead to an autism diagnosis?
So, you know, the rate in rise of autism is multifactorial. It's genetics, it's early screening, it's, you know, better identification, better classification, and then environmental factors. So it's not one thing. To oversimplify this and identify just one single cause does not do justice to this complex issue.
So it runs the risk of people thinking, it's just this one thing, I can cut that out and prevent the risk.
Yeah.
Well, at Monday's press conference, President Trump repeatedly warned of the risks of Tylenol. He also downplayed the risks of avoiding the medication. Let's listen to some of that.
But here's the thing. There's no downside to doing, other than a mother will have to, as I say, tough it out a little bit. There's no downside to doing this. It's not like, oh, if you do this, you're going to die. There's no downside.
Dr. Simon, what are the risks of pregnant people or of infants not taking Tylenol? Is it accurate to say that there are no downsides?
It's misleading. It's inaccurate. I and medical organizations such as the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, we warn that not treating pain or fever can actually result in health risks for both the mom and the baby or babies. And that includes increased risk for birth defects. Really, the safest approach to taking acetaminophen or Tylenol is judiciously, right? And not to avoid it completely. And it's especially important to understand that alternatives for pain medicine or for fever reduction, such as ibuprofen, is contraindicated in pregnancy and can have harm with well-documented, well-researched risks to the baby. So toughing it out is really problematic statement.
Dr. Rosso, you know, Trump officials are also now pushing leucovorin as a possible autism treatment. What is that? What does the research tell us about that, a possible treatment?
I get this question a lot, especially recently, as you can imagine. So we're not going to get into the weeds of the science, but leucovorin is really interesting. And leucovorin is actually an activated form of folate. So leucovorin is folinic acid. Folate is vitamin B9. And the reason that folate is relevant to autistic individuals is because there is a cerebral folate deficiency, so lower levels of folate in the brain. And we've done whole genome sequencing looking for, you know, genes involved. And within the folate metabolism and transport pathway, they've identified two different genes. And one is metabolizing folate into the active form L-methylfolate, and the other one is a transporter that's actually moving folate into the brain. And in individuals with autism, there are problems with these. So the metabolism into the active form is problematic, and also the transport into the brain is problematic. Folinic acid, being the active form, doesn't have to go through the enzyme that's converting it to the active form, and it can actually bypass that transporter and be transported across the blood-brain barrier differently. And so this is one of the things. There have been researchers that have looked at it. Fry and colleagues have looked and have actually found that in individuals that have autoantibodies to this receptor that I talked about in the brain, the folate receptor alpha, that it shows improvement when we give folinic acid, so the leucovorin. So there's improvements in receptive and expressive language and just kind of overall symptomatology. So it seems promising, but the issue is, like, we need more data. We need to look at it more. And it's also very unlikely that it's going to be a one-size-fits-all because autism is such a heterogeneous disorder.
And Dr. Chima Hassan, it's my understanding that you have some experience using leucovorin with patients. What's your reaction to the idea of advocating for this treatment?
So when I talk to families, I discuss all the risks versus benefits for all the therapies that are available. And then as a group, we come to a decision whether this would be beneficial for their specific child. So it's important to keep that in mind that it's a small study which showed that it may help in communication. We need, you know, more robust research. It doesn't work for all. It is off-label use, so there has to be standardized protocols that are followed. And, you know, families should seek out professionals that have experience with working with children with autism.
Dr. Simon, are you concerned that providers might shy away from recommending acetaminophen either for pregnant people or children out of fear of backlash given these new recommendations?
I'm very concerned about this and the potential for a slippery slope for other medications and vaccines and things like that. Basically, what this does is it generates confusion and anxiety amongst both providers and clinical care obstetrics providers, but also amongst expectant parents. There has been a surge in questions and fears regarding Tylenol safety. And that's going to lead to potential undertreatment of pain and fever and conditions that actually pose a greater risk if left untreated for pregnant individuals and also for babies. And so these mixed signals and dramatic messaging and fear of retaliation or retribution from the clinician standpoint can really undermine confidence, and specifically maternal confidence, parental confidence in you know, evidence-based care. And it can worsen healthcare disparities. It can stigmatize the mothers who end up taking Tylenol. So really, I encourage healthcare leaders to really sit down, talk to their patients. Provider-guided medication is really important in terms of use. And a continued focus on patient safety and well-being is so critical right now. So if any person out there, any parent is concerned, whether they're because they're pregnant or they have a young child, about Tylenol use, I encourage them to please speak to a healthcare provider.
All right. Well, much more to say on this topic, but I'm afraid that's where we'll have to leave it for this evening. Dr. Melissa Simon, Dr. Aisha Chima Hassan, Dr. Kristen Rosso, thank you all for joining us. We appreciate
it.
Thank
you, of course.
Thank you. And we're back with more right after this. In many communities, demand for mental health services is at an all-time high, and the need is particularly acute in brown and black communities that often lack access to those resources. In honor of Hispanic Heritage Month, our Joanna Hernandez visited the Gage Park neighborhood, where she learned about a mental health center that's taking care of underserved communities and offering bilingual services.
On the southwest side, along West 51st Street, is Centro Sanar, which translates to Heal Center. Edwin Martinez is one of the co-founders. The clinic was once a local pediatrician's office. Now it's providing free mental health services.
We started March and June of 2020, but basically it was like me working in a different organization and then doing volunteer work for Centro Sanar, but basically carrying my baby and providing mental health service.
That's how much Martinez believed in the mission of providing wellness support to Latino communities that often lack access to therapy because of insurance barriers.
In terms of what folks need, I think it's an array of support that centers their own healing journey. So whether that be individual therapy, couples therapy, family therapy, I'm thinking about like really culturally specific, high quality mental health care that tends to be inaccessible for folks.
What began as a grassroots initiative 5 years ago by local mental health providers has evolved into what Centro Sanar is today, focusing on helping people break through their complex traumas through different techniques.
I've had clients say I'm seeing or I saw someone once a month for like 20, 30 minutes, right? So I think what makes Centro Sanar so special is the ability to be able to provide those high quality free services on a consistent basis for up to 2 years, right? And in some cases, we've been providing services for longer than that too.
Maritza Campos is a first generation Latina who says her upbringing inspired her to become a case manager. Eventually, she returned to school to become a therapist.
Looking back at my family growing up in Iowa, there wasn't a lot of like resources that were in Spanish. They were navigating court systems. They were navigating all these other systems that they had no, like they were barely learning about it themselves. So I was like, I want to be that person that's able to help other folks navigate systems that they don't understand. That's not, even I didn't understand when I first started.
The nonprofit serves neighborhoods throughout the Southwest Side, from Gage Park to Brighton Park and Little Village.
He's here to help.
It's been life-changing, and you know that not only like you're in it for yourself to help yourself with your own work, but they're here for you too.
Erika Sanchez has been receiving therapy for 2 years and says the tools she has learned have helped her become a better mother to her son.
It's okay to come looking for help and to be able to have an opportunity in a place like Centro Sanar. Like, it's amazing. And the fact that they're able to do this for us at no cost.
Martinez says the center has assisted nearly 65 families, serving over 2,000 individuals since its opening, with ages ranging from 10 to 44 years old.
I see it as a huge resource for Centro Sanar to really provide that anchor of community wellness. this is me using my skill set and what the community has wanted for a long period of time and bringing it to fruition.
For Martinez, a first-generation Mexican-American, being the executive director of a mental health clinic is a way to break those stereotypes surrounding mental health in the Latino community.
I'm also a father of a seven-year-old and a five-year-old, so I think of, you know, what I feel I need, but also what I feel that other folks can benefit from as well. And selfishly, I want to create a better world for my kids.
For Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
While the nonprofit is growing, Martinez says the need for mental health services is also growing. The wait list can last up to 10 months. There's more information on our website. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. You can also get the show via podcast and the PBS Video app. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7 for the Week in Review. Now for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm that gives back to the community through law and philanthropy.